welcome to Speaking of College of Charleston. I'm Ron Menchaca from University Communications, and on today's episode, I speak with Professor of English Scott Peoples, who has devoted much of his academic career to studying the life and works of American author Edgar Allan Poe. Peoples has written three books on Poe, including his most recent, The Man of the Crowd, Edgar Allan Poe and the City, which was published in 2020. For the book, Peoples researched Poe's time in cities such as Richmond, Baltimore, Philadelphia, and New York City, as the mercurial author struggled to make a decent living at his craft. But Peoples, who has been teaching at the college continuously since 1996, did not have to travel far to visit one place where Poe spent time. From 1827 to 1828, Poe lived on Sullivan's Island, South Carolina, while serving in the U.S. Army at Fort Moultrie. While little is known about Poe's time in the Lowcountry, he later included the Charleston coast in some of his short stories, including one of his most celebrated works, The Gold Bug. On today's episode, we'll accompany Peoples to some of the Lowcountry landmarks associated with Poe, whose 214th birthday is on January 19, 2023. And we'll separate the facts from the myths surrounding one of the most recognizable names and faces in American literature. Our journey begins on the college's main campus, in Peoples' office, on the second floor of 74 George Street. Good morning, Professor Peoples.
Good morning.
So you are, you're obviously an incredibly talented professor, but you are known specifically for one thing, and that's your expertise on Edgar Allan Poe. So we're going to delve into that today, and we're going to visit a few sites around Charleston and Sullivan's Island that are tied to Edgar Allan Poe. But I wanted to kind of really quickly just go back and see if you can remember, when were you first introduced to Poe? Do you remember?
The earliest memory I have associated with Poe, when I was a little kid, my older sisters used to like to tell scary stories, particularly, you know, to me, to keep me from going to sleep. They were reading, you know, they were reading stuff like Poe in, I guess, by that time, middle school. But I think even before I could read, I heard the plots of stories like The Cask of Amontillado and The Telltale Heart, sort of, you know, just told to me by older siblings, just to scare me, and it worked pretty well.
Peoples left his hometown of Charleston to pursue an undergraduate degree in American Studies at Georgetown University. Poe was still seen as a writer who was estranged from mid-19th century America, but when Peoples began working on his doctorate in American Literature at Louisiana State University, he saw Poe in a new light while taking a course on the modern short story.
And in taking that course, I learned how important Poe was to the development of the short story, and particularly the way that his career in American magazines as an editor and writer was vital in creating not just the American short story, but the modern short story period. And I was fascinated by that, and it really kind of got me interested in Poe in a new way, because I started thinking about his place in literary history and his place in American culture. So that's when it sort of took off for me.
So Professor Peoples, for somebody who is not familiar with Poe, if an alien landed today and you had to describe Poe to this alien, who was Edgar Allan Poe?
Poe was an American writer who lived from 1809 to 1849. Who was famous particularly for his poem The Raven, but was generally well known as a poet and literary critic during his lifetime, and also was fairly well known in his lifetime for short stories. Today, he is probably best known for his short fiction, and particularly gothic stories, horror stories such as The Telltale Heart, The Black Cat, The Fall of the House of Usher, The Cask of Amontillado. So he's closely associated with American Gothicism, but he's actually a very versatile writer, did a lot more than most people are aware of. But he never made a good living from his writing. So I think some people assume that because Poe was sort of famously poor throughout his life, that he must have been unknown as well. But the two didn't necessarily go hand in hand in the publishing industry of Poe's time. And so he did have a strong literary reputation. He also had a kind of notorious reputation among other writers because he was not always easy to get along with. He had a drinking problem that frequently got him into trouble. So he was somewhat notorious, but never really well paid. He simply, you know, for various reasons, he was never able to convert the fame that he gained, particularly from The Raven, into a really remunerative career.
And you touched on this with the drinking, but his personal life, he experienced one tragedy after another, and that obviously influenced his work in some ways. Can you talk about the non-writing side of his life a little bit?
So Poe, one of the things that seemed to be a tragic pattern in his life was the loss of women who were very meaningful to him, starting with his biological mother, who died just before he was 3 years old in 1811. And that loss seems to have really affected Poe throughout his life. Subsequently, his foster mother, Frances Allen, died at a young age when Poe was in his early 20s. Later, his wife, Virginia, died at a young age in 1847. And all three died of tuberculosis. Poe also lost other women who were close to him, but I think mainly his mother, his foster mother, and his wife, seeing all of them die at quite young ages really had a big effect on him.
Since Poe's father had already abandoned the family, the death of his mother left Poe and his two siblings orphaned. Poe is taken in and raised by the wealthy Allen family of Richmond, Virginia. At 17, he enrolled in the University of Virginia. By all accounts, he was a good student, but he also drank and gambled heavily. In December 1826, after less than a year at UVA, he dropped out. At 18, Poe enlisted in the Army under an assumed name. He was assigned to an artillery battery in Boston Harbor before being shipped to Fort Moultrie on Sullivan's Island in November 1827. But before we head to Fort Moultrie, we have one other stop along the way. People says no discussion of Poe's time in the Lowcountry is complete without a visit to the island's iconic Poe's Tavern. The restaurant has not yet opened when we arrive, but the staff let us inside to chat at a table while they prep for lunch. I ask Peoples where the restaurant fits into the larger story of Poe's cultural influence.
Well, particularly in the 20th century and, of course, into the 21st century, Poe has been a kind of icon of popular culture associated with Gothicism especially. So enough people are fans of Poe that it kind of makes sense to have a Poe-themed restaurant and bar. Looking around the place here, you just see a couple of dozen paintings and posters depicting Poe's likeness, which is pretty incredible since there were not that many likenesses taken of Poe during his lifetime.
So one might think that a scholar might look down on a place like this where this is not an academic setting, it's a little more frivolous. You do not see it that way.
Oh, no, not at all. I think one of the things that makes Poe interesting, I mean, not just his work, but also the idea of Poe is that he's had such a robust pop culture afterlife. And I think that places like Poe's Tavern only enhance that. It's good for business. It's good for the academic Poe business even to have Poe so prominent in the cultural landscape today.
And kind of expand on that. Why does his image, his works,
why do they remain so popular? It seems to only increase as we move along.
Yeah, I think that's been true for a long time because Poe combines academic respectability. People study him in school, they study him in college. He's taken very seriously as a writer. But he's also kind of fun, and people also associate him with Halloween and scary stories. So I think that's the most basic explanation of Poe's enduring popularity, is that he is both taken seriously as a writer, but he's also someone with wide popular appeal. And I think people like the idea of a writer who was underappreciated in his time. We talked a little earlier about the fact that Poe never made a good living from his writing. And I think that that image too, paradoxically, helps him long after long after his death, because I think a lot of people are drawn to that idea that, okay, they didn't appreciate him properly then, but we do appreciate him now. So by championing Poe, you're sort of on the side of the underdog, the great artist who was misunderstood in his own time or not properly appreciated in his own time.
But can you talk a little bit about Charleston and the Lowcountry region, particularly Sullivan's Island, its embrace of Poe? When did all that start?
Yeah, exactly. And it's a long and interesting story, actually. People didn't know that Poe had been stationed at Fort Moultrie for decades after his death. Poe didn't let people know that he was an enlisted man in the Army in his own lifetime. When he was asked for biographical information, he made stuff up and sort of covered over that chapter of his life. So it wasn't until 1885, which was over three decades after Poe's death, that a biographer learned that he had been in the Army and found the records that located him here for the year of 1828. So, and then after that, it took Charleston a few decades to kind of figure out what to do with it. But during the 1920s and the Charleston Literary Renaissance, writers began to reflect on the significance of Poe having spent time at Fort Moultrie, and particularly DuBose Hayward, who also wrote the novel Porgy, Hervey Allen, who went on to write an important biography of Poe, wrote poems about Poe on Sullivan's Island.
And kind of going back to Poe's Tavern, as we sit here, your head is filled with so much knowledge about Poe, both fact and fiction. As you look around at all of the kind of the iconic images of him and movie posters and things, kind of just describe it maybe for somebody who hasn't been here, or maybe somebody who is not from the area. When you look at some of these images, what comes to mind? What do you think about?
So looking around from where I'm sitting, most of what I see are variations on a portrait of Poe that was done within a year of his death. And they all have the features that we associate with Poe today, even though it wasn't really the appearance that he had for most of his life. But these really sort of sunken, sad, prominent eyes, a very pronounced large forehead, the mustache, which he didn't wear for most of his life, actually, and the kind of disheveled black hair. So they're all just, even though that no two look quite alike, they're all recognizably Poe, and so they all, they seem to add up to something. And then along with that, a number of movie posters, most of which are from the 1960s, and from the what's often referred to as the Poe cycle of films directed by Roger Corman and starring Vincent Price, which American International Films sort of cranked out from about 1964 through 1969 or 1970.
Well, we were talking earlier about how he, although he was quite popular in his time, he did not financially benefit from much of his work. Would the same be true of the movies and his estate? Did they have to buy rights to books, or is there any benefit to the Poe estate from all these movies that came about in the 60s?
Poe's work has long been out of copyright. And so I think, you know, to kind of go back to the question of why is Poe so popular, I think one, you know, very practical answer is that for a long time, you've been able to reprint his work, use his image, use titles of his stories however you want to without having to pay anybody a dime. So I think thinking back to, you know, Poe's behavior and Poe's personality when he was alive, he would be really gratified by the attention that he gets today and the reverence that people have for him. But I think he would really want to see some royalties.
We leave Poe's Tavern and drive down Middle Street to Fort Moultrie, which is managed by the National Park Service. At the Fort's Visitor Center, we bump into one of Professor Peoples' students, Jim Muir, a military retiree who takes classes at the college and volunteers at Fort Moultrie.
When visitors come here, Jim, to Fort Moultrie and you know, for the history, do they know about the Poe connection, or do they learn that while they're here?
A good number of them already know.
Really?
Well, they know who Edgar Allan Poe is lots of the time because they've been to Poe's Tavern. But this is where I talk about Poe, standing here, so I can say he lived in this barracks or that barracks. He started out in the commissary. But because of his knowledge of artillery pieces, he was promoted, and he eventually ended up as an artificer. And an artificer, in artillery terms, is he knew more about the artillery pieces than anybody else. And that's why he became an E9, because of his knowledge of artillery.
People says Poe probably used his downtime at Fort Moultrie to write.
Yeah, he probably wrote some pretty good poems while he was here. This was between his first volume of poetry, which he published just before he enlisted in Boston in 1827, and his second volume of poetry, which was published in Baltimore in 1829. Mm-hmm. It stands to reason that he was probably working on some of those poems, at least, while he was here.
Poe remained at Fort Moultrie until December 1828. By that time, he was growing restless with Army life and began seeking an appointment to West Point. He was eventually accepted and entered the Military Academy in July 1830. Though he was a good student, Poe still desired to make a living as a writer, and by the end of February 1831, he was kicked out of West Point for gross neglect of duty and disobedience of orders. As we say our goodbyes to Jim at Fort Moultrie and make our way to the car, I ask Peoples what the likelihood is that Poe ventured into Charleston during his stint at the fort.
I think we can assume that. There's no hard evidence that places Poe in any building in Charleston at any particular time. But it's hard to imagine that, you know, during a peacetime that a member of a regiment stationed here would not have gone to Charleston at every opportunity.
In fact, people says there is one particular place in Charleston that Poe very likely visited. And so that's where we head next.
So, Professor Peoples, now we've moved back onto the peninsula. We're just near Broad Street. We're actually near the corner of New and Logan Streets. There is no longer is a theater here, but there once was, and it has a connection to Poe and his family. Talk about that.
That's right. The Charleston Theater would have been somewhere in this area where we're standing right now. And both of Poe's parents performed there. Poe's mother, Eliza Poe, would have performed there as a child actress in the 1790s, and then again in 1811, after Poe was born. So he was probably with her in Charleston as an infant or toddler when she was performing at the Charleston Theater. She was a very popular actress, and Poe was proud of the fact that his mother had been an actress, even though that wasn't always considered to be a respectable occupation at the time. And it's also possible that when he came, when he was stationed at Fort Moultrie and had opportunities to come to Charleston, he may have tried to visit places where she had been, or go through newspaper files to try to find out more information about his mother. So, yeah, the theater background that Poe sort of grew up with was important to him.
It's fun to imagine him, maybe when he was stationed at Fort Moultrie, coming into Charleston to take in a play or something like that.
Yeah, and it's certainly possible, likely even, that he would have come to the theater. The Charleston Theater was not only here during his mother's lifetime, but it would have still been here at this location in 1828 when Poe would have probably been visiting Charleston.
So while we can place Poe in Charleston at least once as a child, and possibly later when he was in the army here, there is another location nearby that Charlestonians often associate with Poe. And for that story, we head to the final stop on our journey. So Professor Peoples, there's a bit of an urban legend surrounding one of Poe's best-known works, the poem Annabelle Lee. And so we've come to this location to talk a little bit about that. Can you tell us where we're at and what the story is?
Sure. So we're on Archdale Street in front of the Unitarian Church. There's a beautiful churchyard next to the church where, according to Charleston legend or myth, Annabelle Lee, famous for the poem that Poe published in 1849, is buried. There is absolutely no evidence to support this legend, but it's become very popular over the years, and from about the mid-20th century on has just been part of Charleston lore. Best I can tell, it really took off around 1969 and in the early 70s, when someone wrote a letter to the newspaper sort of jokingly suggesting that since we know that Poe had lived in the Low Country, we could tell people basically that Annabelle Lee is buried in Charleston and draw tourists to her grave, sort of like the tomb of Juliet in Verona. And it kind of picked up steam from there. That idea was republished in a book that was basically an edition of The Gold Bug, which is set on Sullivan's Island. That came out in 1969, and there was an appendix at the end of the book repeating and sort of elaborating on this story about Annabelle Lee meeting Poe in the Unitarian Churchyard, being buried in the Unitarian Churchyard. And so I think today you can probably hear ghost tour guides tell that story, tell different versions of that story. As great a story as it is, unfortunately, it's completely untrue. Poe wrote the poem more than 20 years after he lived in Charleston, so the likelihood that it is about someone that he had known and a lost love from 20 years earlier, when he had had relationships with other women and had not too long before lost his beloved wife, it seems unlikely, and there's no biographical evidence of an Annabelle Lee from Charleston who Poe knew. We don't know who he met in Charleston, and we don't really even know where he went when he was in Charleston.
And there really is no information about the true inspiration for the poem either.
I would think it's most likely, if he had any specific woman in mind, it was probably his wife, since the poem is about the tragic death of someone that the poet loved, and his wife had died fairly recently. But it may have just been, you know, Poe writing about one of his most common themes, which is the death of a woman, the death of a beautiful woman, grief, loss, and the name Annabelle Lee It sounds good in the poem. A lot of things rhyme with it. It just works poetically. And Poe was really the kind of writer for whom that was the most important thing. He was a poet of sound and feeling, but writing autobiographically at that point, that wasn't really what he was doing. So I think of Annabelle Lee as more, really more of a sound experiment and a poem about loss generally than an autobiographical poem about a specific woman.
So you made reference to The Gold Bug, perhaps one of Poe's best-known works. Talk about the story and its connection to the Lowcountry.
So the story is basically a buried treasure story. The narrator is a friend of a reclusive man who lives on Sullivan's Island. The story involves his tracing down a buried treasure left by Captain Kidd, and first determining that a seemingly blank piece of parchment, when heated, will reveal invisible ink that has a treasure map, and then decoding the treasure map so that he can determine the location where he should dig for the treasure. So the story, a lot of it is sort of told in retrospect, but it essentially ends with the three men digging up a buried pirate treasure.
When The Gold Bug was published in 1843, no one would have known that the setting of the story on Sullivan's Island had been inspired by Poe's time there as a soldier. That's because he enlisted under the assumed name Edgar A. Perry. The fact that Poe had actually lived on Sullivan's Island was not discovered until many decades later.
Well, Poe wrote The Gold Bug about 15 years after he had been stationed at Fort Moultrie. The setting is important in some ways because it involves a buried treasure left by pirates, so it needs to be set at a place where there were pirates, and it needs to be set in a sort of remote place because of the main character and the way that he's living in a kind of isolated life as he pursues this treasure. Otherwise, it doesn't have to be set specifically on Sullivan's Island. But of course, Poe had been there, and so he used it. He takes some liberties with the setting and his description of Sullivan's Island and the mainland nearby. But it sort of doesn't matter. I mean, it's cool for the Carolina Lowcountry that this is one of the only places. One of, I think, only two places in America where Poe set a story where he had actually lived, the other being the Ragged Mountains near Charlottesville, Virginia.
Thank you, Professor Peoples, for your time today.
Thanks, my pleasure.
If you want to learn more about the life and works of Edgar Allan Poe, there are links in the show notes to books by Professor Scott Peoples, as well as other resources. Thank you for listening to this episode of Speaking of College of Charleston, with today's guest, English professor Scott Peoples. For more episodes and to read stories about our guests, visit the College of Charleston's official news site, The College Today, at today.cfc.edu. You can also find this and past episodes on all major podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and leave a review. This episode was produced by Amy Stockwell and Ron Menchaca from University Communications, with recording and sound engineering by Jesse Kunz from the Division of Information Technology. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.